there's been a lot of talk about vaccination, obviously, in the last couple of years, vaccination for all types of things, including, of course, COVID as well. And in amongst all the different things that perhaps you were putting on your schedule of things to do, I wonder if you, and this is particularly for the women listening in the audience, if you missed the news that the vaccine schedule for the HPV jab has actually changed this year. And I wonder too if you've put that in the back of your mind, because you might have also heard the news that we're on track, and partly due to a lot of work done by some Australian scientists, but we're on track to eliminate cervical cancer by 2035, which is fabulous when you think about it. But it might have meant that it's all sort of gone into the back of your mind. You haven't thought much about what you might still need to do. So to just sort of remind us, I guess, where we're at, we're joined by our Dr. David Vrede. He's the Vice Chair of the Australian Centre for Prevention of Cervical Cancer on the board there, and joins us right now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Georgia. Thanks very much for having me on.
You're welcome. So Australia's played a bit of a key role in this, isn't it, when it comes to the vaccine for cervical cancer?
Enormous. First of all, the scientists working in Australia, particularly Ian Fraser and his colleagues, were involved in the creation of the cervical cancer vaccine. Australia was one of the first countries to roll out the vaccine, and we've also had the broadest expanse of vaccine in terms of ages. So no other country had this catch-up program in 2007, so that everyone between the age, all women between the ages of 11 and 26 were offered the vaccine. Those 26-year-olds are now over 40. So the coverage we've got as a country is probably better than anywhere else in the world.
I imagine, though, that there's still certain groups within the community that might not be getting the vaccines.
They're correct. And the ones we are always concerned about are first Australians and recent immigrants, asylum seekers, and those who don't have English as a first language. And also it needs to be extended to all people who have a cervix. But I would just say that from 2013, the vaccine at schools was offered to both boys and girls, and that was giving added protection to women or people with a cervix, but it was also protecting boys from some rarer cancers that they might get from HPV.
Mm. And so when we talk about the HPV virus, does wiping out the virus wipe out any chance of getting cervical cancer?
It removes the risk of over 95% of cervix cancer. There are some forms of rare cervix cancer that are not related to HPV infection, but the vast majority of cervix cancers, both of the outside of the cervix and of the glandular from the inside, are related to HPV infections.
So if we can get the majority of the population up to date with the vaccinations, we can rule out, or I guess eliminate, most of it. We'll never eliminate it completely, will we?
No. Well, it's important we get the definitions right here. Mm. So elimination has targets. Eradication, that's getting to zero cervix cancer across the whole community, may take longer. The first target for elimination is 4 cases per 100,000 women per year. At the moment, Australia is at about just over 6 per 100,000 women per year. And we think we can reach that first target of less than 4 cases per 100,000 women per year by sometime between 2030 and 35. The next level is less than 1 case per 100,000 women per year. And that's a level at which you're really needing eradication. Maybe that will be achievable by 2050 in this country. But we may certainly be the first country to achieve these targets that were set by the WHO. And the WHO campaign was a response to a motion that was co-sponsored by important Australian public health scientists, including Professor Karen Canfield from Sydney. So we've also played a role in that global health policy.
So let's talk about how it's scheduled when we have the vaccines. That's changed. Why has that changed?
Well, it's changed as we've got better evidence of the effectiveness of the vaccine. We know the vaccine produces high levels of antibodies against HPV and against the types that are included in the vaccine. Those levels seem to persist. And whereas it was thought we needed to boost those levels by second and third doses, we now know that the protection against disease is safe with one dose. So we've got, we've got advice from ATAGI that's based on studies that were commissioned by WHO and also from the UK vaccination regulators, that one dose gives the kind of protection that young people need. And therefore, a one-dose schedule will be offered in all schools to all boys and girls from kind of years 7 and 8. And if you miss it, you can get it subsequently, and it will remain free for people to catch up until the age of 25, which is also another extension of the availability of the vaccine. Mm. Using less doses to get people vaccinated also means there's more vaccine to go around, and that means there's more vaccine to be used in countries where it's been previously difficult to get it. And we know that, you know, countries close to us like Papua New Guinea and other places in Oceania have very, very high levels of cervix cancer. So getting vaccine availability to be used in those countries will be very important in terms of reaching the global targets for cervical cancer elimination.
But on our own shores, does the focus need to be now more on, say, as you mentioned, migrant populations and also First Australians?
That's true. And it's a combination of things to reach elimination. Vaccination is incredibly important, but it's also important people go and have their screening tests. And since the end of 2017, beginning 2018, we've been using a test for the virus as the screening test. That test is much more sensitive than the Pap test. Now, it was collected in exactly the same way as the Pap test, and some women found that intimidating. And from July this year, women can put a swab in the vagina and collect a sample themselves to find if they have HPV or not. Now, HPV comes in many different types. There are, in fact, 60 or more types that infect the genital area. Most are quite rare. Of those, there are about 15 that can be associated with cervix cancer. And 16 and 18, cause more than 70% of cervix cancer around the world. The new vaccine protects against 9 types of HPV. It gives about a 90% protection against genital warts, and it gives a 90% protection against infections that can lead to cervix cancer, but there's still a small gap. And the original vaccine only protected against 4 types of HPV. So women or people with a cervix who've been vaccinated still need to get their screening tests. That's a very important message for us to go on and to meet the elimination target. If we don't keep the pressure on for people to get their tests and for young people to get vaccination, that target will slip away from us. And we need to move into remote and rural areas, poorer areas in metropolitan Australia, and into our First Nations communities to make sure all people who are eligible get the vaccine and get the tests in the way that's acceptable to them.
And is it partly, I guess, one of the offshoots of so many steps being taken, I guess, or the success in a sense of what's been done so far that people might be complacent?
I think that's right. And you know, when people don't have lived experience of something, then it becomes more and more difficult to find the drivers to go and do it. When you certainly, if you meet somebody whose family has been infected by cervix cancer, they are incredibly compliant with all the things to help avoid it. We need to keep that message out there. You know, if we want to maintain the leadership we've got in eliminating this disease and give us more availability to help neighbouring nations to do the same, then we've got to keep the pressure up. We've got to keep the messages flowing, both in the schools and in the communities.
So we've got vaccinations, we've got the screenings as well, as you mentioned. What about symptoms, though, early symptoms of cervical cancer?
Well, cervical cancer, the early symptoms really aren't really there. That's why we have screening. And most women who have cervical precancer or even early cancer won't have symptoms. What we do know is that in women over 35, bleeding after intercourse, excess vaginal discharge with potentially blood in it, change in urinary symptoms, particularly urinary frequency, and or pelvic pain and pain on intercourse may be a sign that something is wrong and you need to go and get checked up by your doctor.
But you're saying by the time they have those symptoms, it might already be progressed?
Yes, certainly you'd be concerned that it might be at a higher stage that then might require radical surgery, or if it's actually outside the cervix, might require chemo radiation for treatment. Now, even advanced cases of cervix cancer are treated extremely well in Australia. And, you know, I work at the Women's Hospital in Cancer Prevention and the Peter MacCallum Cancer Institute's next door. And we work as a team to manage patients who have cervix cancer. Overall cure rates and long-term survival from cervix cancer of all stages is now in excess of 73%. But obviously, the earlier we find someone who has precancer or early cervix cancer, the better the prognosis is.
David, just quickly, we're coming up to news, but Sally said wants to know what's changed for people over 65 when it comes to testing. Has there been a major change for that age group?
There has been. So whereas Pap tests stopped at 65, women are, all people with a cervix are advised to have a test every 5 years, and you need to have a negative test between the ages of 70 and 75 to exit the screening program. So it has been extended, and that's really quite important, because in the past we've known there's a small tail of increased risk to cervix cancer in the older age group, and we believe that by detecting persistent low grades of HPV in that older age group, we may be able to help them avoid the disease in late life.
We really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. That's Dr. David Avride there, Vice Chair of the Australian Centre for Prevention of Cervical Cancer. Quite a lot of information in there, depending on what age group you are in. And thank you so much to Sally for that important question too at the end there. But there is lots of great information up online too for you to check some of this information, including the Cancer Council has a great website, so do lots of the cancer organisations as well. If you missed any of that information, or whenever we do a story here, want some more, just send us a text 0467 922 666.